I see the red from here. Thank you, Carl. Today we're going to look at the issue of weak Christian, strong Christian, and try to understand it, better than maybe we have in the past. Understand what weak and strong means to the Apostle Paul, what weak and strong means to God, because most importantly, it doesn't matter what people think, it's from God's perspective. That's what counts. It's from God's perspective. And also an understanding the mistake that Judaism made. Paul says a lot of wonderful things. You know, the oracles of God were given to the Jews, and you know, all the things that are in the book of Romans and other places. And he wished with all his heart that all the Jews had been converted, and he even says, well, the day when they're all converted will be a wonderful blessing for the whole world. And all that is true when Christ comes back and, you know, God's kingdom will start in Jerusalem and spread out to the whole world. By the way, interesting thing, I heard on the radio that President Trump, you know, because of some PLO things they've said recently, and they give money to, they financially support terrorists with our money. He's threatening to withhold all our money. No president's ever done that. And, you know, he's the type, if he says it, he might very well do it. He says it's on the table, the PLO had better. Anyway, and no one in the media has reported that. All I'm saying is peace starts, will someday start at Jerusalem and the Jewish people and spread throughout the world. I know that's a distraction, but I just can't, something that shocked me, and nowhere else in the media and Abbas's comments have been very, very anti-Semitic and very provocative. No one in the media has mentioned it. But one of the mistakes that Judaism made, sometimes when people look at Judaism, they say, well, they have the Bible, the only Bible that existed when the New Testament church started. And of course, Christ was Jewish. They said, well, how can you differentiate the worship of the true God from Judaism? And it does require some thought. But I want to go to Romans 10. We won't look at that whole issue, but we'll look at one aspect of it. And it relates to the weak and the strong. The Jewish approach, and I'm not saying I don't understand it, human nature being what it is, when the Jews came back from captivity, they wanted to be sure they didn't make the mistakes of idolatry and Sabbath breaking and a whole bunch of other things that they did before. So they started over the years building more rules and rules. And one branch of Judaism, the Pharisees, they were a substantial group of the Jewish population, they went to even greater extremes. So I'm going to Romans 10, 1 through 3, to get a look at what Paul said about his own people, who he loved. So this is not anti-Semitic. He loves the Jewish people. He's saying this to make a point. The whole book of Romans, of course, you know, he says that the world is wrong, the Gentiles are wrong, the Jews are wrong, everybody's wrong. When you go through the chapters of the book of Romans, he clearly lays that out. Then in chapter 10, verse 1, Paul says, brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved. And by Israel, at that time, the tribes that of Israel that were known and active, now they may have known that some of the lost 10 were farther up in Europe somewhere. Whether they knew that or not, it's probably irrelevant. The ones that Paul was dealing with were basically Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, who were, and maybe a few others, who were what's called the house of Judah or the Jewish people. My prayer, God, for Israel is that they might be saved. For I bear them record that they have a zeal for God. Zeal, Z-E-A-L. And there's nothing wrong with zeal. But here's the problem. They have a zeal of God or for God, but not according to knowledge. Not according to, be like if maybe your grandson was on a power boat that had a super power engine and he threw that thing full throttle to roar across the lake, but he didn't have the knowledge to know how to control it, how not to hit the waves, you know, the wrong way. He may be heading for disaster. Zeal is a good thing, if it's used according to knowledge, but it can be a bad thing if you don't have the knowledge. For being ignorant of God's righteousness and going about to establish their own righteousness. Even if they had the Bible, and so we're not denying that, but still, they were establishing more of their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God. In other words, they had the zeal, but somehow they got off track, trying to, I'll put it this way, save themselves through efforts, but the efforts were not lined up with what God wanted. And I think that is the part, that's at least part of the definition of a weak Christian. You might accept Christ, but if you're still using an approach of establishing your own righteousness, then you're actually a weak Christian. That's what Paul is saying. We get into more things. I want to go to what is the weakest spiritual position you can have. You want to call it the zero point, the very bottom, the weakest spiritual position. I think it's self-righteousness from God's point of view. God rejects religious pride. You know, I am so pious and holy because I do whatever I do. God rejects that. Let's go to Luke 18. I know these scriptures are very familiar, especially to this audience. You all know all this. But I want to just emphasize to God, this is, God just rejects it totally. When you read the whole context, the ones he blasted the most when Christ came were the Pharisees. I mean, there's no way you can get around it. Luke 18, verse 9. And here's why. I want to emphasize pride, religious pride, trust in yourself and your righteousness is a definition of Christian weakness from God's point of view. 18:9. So these people had the Bible, but notice what God said about them. Luke 18, verse 9. He spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous. They believed they were righteous and despised others. I'm good, and these other idiots are dung compared to my spirituality. You can see what God thinks of this. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee, the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, because God isn't hearing this. You know, God isn't in on this kind of thing. I thank you, God, that I am not as other men. Never think that you don't have human nature just because God calls you. Human nature is always stuck in the background. As a matter of fact, I heard a basketball coach was talking, but I believe what he said. His team pulled off a tremendous upset victory. He said, he's been around basketball for years. He said, especially these are young players, young men especially. When you pull off a great victory like that, you're setting yourself up for a big fall. Because it'll go to your head, and you'll think you're better than you really are, and then they're going to end up having some really big, surprising losses. They call it the up. They call it the false bounce up, and they fall down. And for basketball fans, some of you may remember that. But it's what I mean by human pride in that context. Human nature is always there in every context. I'm not as other men are. You are as other men. You just, anyway. Extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. And there's no reason to believe he was lying. Let's just say it was Tuesday, Thursday, and he skipped two meals, maybe breakfast and lunch, or lunch and dinner. Oh. And probably tithe. There's another version of this where the guy goes into his garden and counts tea leaves in his garden to tithe on every picky little leaf. By the way, one thing is interesting. When you read the laws of God about farms, because most of them were farmers, God told them not to harvest the corners of their fields and the stuff that the regular line of harvesters couldn't get, stuff that just falls. And it would be there for the poor. God didn't say, let's extract every little penny out of everything. But you can see the Pharisees had a different approach. And when they tithed like that, they felt so pious. It was, I'm sure, made them really feel good. So, isn't it logical when it comes to the Christians who were in Rome, and if you read Romans 1:15 and other chapters, and the last Romans 28, Paul had not gotten to Rome till the end of the book of Acts. So when he wrote the book of Romans, he was years away from reaching Rome, and that's why the book of Romans is so basic, because they had no teacher. We believe that they probably, because Rome was the capital of the empire, so a lot of Jews would have lived there for prosperity purposes. A lot of them would go to the Feast of Tabernacles or Pentecost, and they'd hear about Jesus Christ and say, I believe, and maybe got baptized or at least became Christian believers, but they brought with them their same old Jewish thinking. They didn't have anybody to kind of soften that thinking. And it's logical that if a large percentage of Judaism was Pharisaical thinking, a fair percentage of the Christians in Rome would have that background. I mean, it's just logical to assume that. And we know from other verses there were Pharisees who were believers. You can read that in Acts 15. And of course, some of them, I'm sure over time, outgrew their Pharisaical background and got stronger and became great Christians and will be in God's kingdom. But so many of these Roman Christians were self-righteous. It's just logical. And so when Paul writes to the Romans, he's trying to help them. What about non-Jews? While we're in Romans, let's go to Romans 11. Because I want to mention to us non-Jews, Paul gives us a warning message too, because there were proselytes to Judaism that were in Rome and others who may have picked it up from them. This is for us non-Jews, but it applies to everybody. Romans 11:18, boast not against the branches, he means the Israelites or the Jews, but if you boast, remember, boasting is bad to God. God doesn't want to hear you boast about how good you are. That's not what God wants to hear. You bears not the root, but the root bears you. In other words, Israel is the root of the truth. And we all know that in the Bible, etc. And you will say then, the branches were broken off that I may be grafted in. In other words, non-Jews are grafted into to Israel. Or spiritual Israel. Well, because of unbelief, they were broken off, and you stand by faith. But notice Paul says, be not high-minded. In other words, don't let it go to your head that only a certain number of Jews have converted, and most of them haven't, and God has brought in certain Gentiles. We Gentiles need to not get high-minded because we got called. And in our world, we got the calling, and a lot of people haven't. Don't get high-minded. And believe me, God didn't call us because we're the best people in the world. We can see better than that. So it doesn't even take any effort, have to convince anybody about that. So let's go to Romans 14 and look at what Paul says about the weak Christians and the strong Christians. And I think if we understand it better, it will help us long term not become weak. Romans 14:1. Him that is weak in the faith receive you, but not to over doubtful disputation, or don't argue with them over doubtful issues. I think the King James says doubtful issues. For one believes that he may eat all things. Now, you know they don't mean eat poison and stuff that's bad for you. They knew what Paul meant. They meant clean, reasonable meats. You know, Jews would not be, oh, I can eat arsenic and poison. You know that's not what he meant. Because people have taken the Bible out of context and ran crazy with it. All things. Another who is weak eats only herbs or vegetables. We actually covered that when we talked about 1 Corinthians chapters 8, 9, and 10. But just to review, some of the Jewish people and some of the Christians believe that these pagans have contaminated the meat supply. Surely in a place like Rome, a huge metropolis, and if you even asked a butcher shop, one of the butcher shops, did any of this meat go before Saturn or Zeus? Because I've done this with some other stuff, we'll get to that. You know, the waitress, they'll tell you what you want to hear. They don't care. Oh, no, none of this meat went to Saturn or Zeus or Venus or Astarte. No, it's whatever you want. They knew they couldn't trust it. One, the butchers probably couldn't keep track of it. Two, they didn't care, because them, that's great. So they knew maybe 60-70% of the meat supply had come through the pagan temples. They said, well, we're going to be purist. We will eat nothing but vegetables because we can't trust any of the meat in the city of Rome. But what's interesting, Paul says, who is weak eats vegetables. In other words, the purists, the ones who are going to be more pious, Paul calls the weak. Because when you first read that, you think, the one who wanted to be the purest, I want to be sure I'm reading every label and talking to everybody, not a impure thing will get through my mouth. By the way, there was a group of Pharisees, and there's a name for them, but they would, when they went to the marketplace, which they often call a bazaar, they wear a screen over their face. So just in case any dust or little bugs that hang around food couldn't accidentally get in their mouth and swallow. I'm making this up, and there's a couple other extreme groups. Now, think of how pure that made them. When I go to the bazaar, there are bugs and stuff flying around. I got my own little personal mesh. Really, Christ actually talked about it. He says, if a little bit of dirt or whatever goes out, through your bowels and your system, he says, it's what goes in your heart that makes you impure, not a little. You get a little dirt now and then, you're not going to die. But can you see how the purest in meat probably felt better than the others? Paul calls them weak, but he says, don't argue with them. They'll outgrow it in time when Paul gets there and gets to teaching, and they shouldn't boast about it. But I understand human nature. I saw some of that in the worldwide, and I guess everybody's seen a little of it. So we understand it. And like some people wrote, they might have been weak on faith, but they probably were strong on opinion. They could probably argue with the others, I'm pure, because none of this polluted meat. And the idol is really nothing unless you make it something. So being pure does not add anything to your spiritual growth. It only adds pride and arrogance, which makes you a weak Christian. Because that's what Romans 14:2 says. The purest were the weak ones. Romans 14:5-7. One man esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord. He that regardeth it not the day to the Lord, he does not regard it. He that eateth to the Lord, for he gives thanks. And he that eateth not. By the way, it says eateth not. It doesn't mean that a person lives a life without eating food. He'd be dead. They knew what he meant. They meant fasting and not fasting. The reason I say that, because people coming from our perspective who don't know the Bible in the background, they can take Paul out of context. No, everybody eats. He means eating meat or fasting, and those who don't fast. Fasting on certain days or not fasting. That's really what he's talking about. So he, get the context again, regardeth it unto the Lord. He that regardeth not today, the Lord regardeth. He that eateth, eats to the Lord, for he gives God thanks. He that eats not, he's not fasting, to the Lord he eats not and gives God thanks. For none of us lives to himself, no man can die of himself. He's saying everybody is God's servant. Don't argue with each other over which days are best to fast on. Remember the Pharisees said he fasted twice a week? When I read this in the commentaries, this sounds silly, but I'm going to tell you what they say, that among that group of Jews, the Pharisaical group, they had debates among themselves as to which days, because they had what I call pattern fasting, or maybe there are other terms for it, and maybe say they'd skip two meals Tuesday, two meals Thursday. Or some said, I think it's better to do Monday, Wednesday. Or some said Wednesday only, kind of in the middle. And they argued over which one was spiritually the best. Now, when we hear that, we think, this is silliness. It is absolutely silliness. But if you study religion and you read things that people have fought over, you will end up saying, you mean they split the church over that? They fought. I mean, literally, some silly things have divided church people in very Paul says these are doubtful issues. In other words, it doesn't matter which days you fast, whether you fast on a regular pattern basis or not, or you can say any day to fast on as good as any other day. And it couldn't be which day to go to church on, because pragmatically, think about it, there's no way you could have a church where everybody decided which day was going to be the church meeting date. It just doesn't work. You think it through, it doesn't work. You got to decide which days you're working, which days you're off. And of course, they'd all know which day to go to church on. They would never even. In other words, when Paul wrote them, by the way, the word Sabbath isn't in the entire letter of Romans, nowhere. They knew what he meant. So the people who were most concerned about which days to fast on were actually the weak ones. And they felt better than the ones who either didn't fast on a regular schedule basis or didn't agree with them on which days are best. And Paul says, be tolerant of each other. Don't make an issue of it. And just to show a little tiny joke about the pettiness people can get into, two dieters wanted to save calories, Jill and Mary. And they decide to share a can of Diet Pepsi. So they pour it out, one glass for Jill and one for Mary. And Jill looks at the can and says, there's one calorie in this. So Jill wonders, which glass has the one calorie? I think it's yours, not mine. Now, as silly as that is, some religious infights almost are that silly. Tuesday, Thursday is better than Monday, Wednesday because, and whatever they said. I frankly, some of the stuff the Pharisees did seems so petty to us, we have a hard time grasping it. But I think that is the way human nature sometimes works. I'm not going to go to Revelation 3:14, where it talks about the Laodiceans, because most of you know this by heart. But I want to talk about the Laodiceans for just a minute to make a point. Now, when Christ reveals this, they think it's seven spirits that represent the kind of attitudes that churches can get into. That's probably the best thinking. The Laodicean attitude is a spiritually weak one. Let me describe why it's a spiritually weak one. The Laodicean said, I am spiritually rich. I have spiritually great eyesight. I have spiritually need of nothing. I'm hitting on all eight cylinders. Anytime a church group starts thinking, I think it might even happen to Worldwide before it apostatized, that they were really so spiritual. At least I think that was the attitude of some. That is a dangerous attitude to get into, thinking, I have spiritual eyesight. I can see the future. I can really understand everything. I mean, we do understand a lot, but there's a lot we don't know. It's like, I'll use the weather as an example. You realize there was a time when they knew nothing about the jet stream. And they still let weathermen on television predicting the weather. They didn't know the most basic element that controls the jet stream. I mean, they eventually discovered it. As a matter of fact, when they bombed Japan in World War II, the bombs, they used high-level bombers, the bombs kept going off target. They didn't know the jet stream ran, there's a lot they didn't know. And actually, I think they're learning ocean currents, and there's little streams around the equator and other stuff. And they're beginning to learn more. And, of course, the biggest factor is the sun. But they don't want to admit that because they can't control it, that carbon. And the same with doctors. If you were to go read a doctor's manual, say, 1950, the stuff they didn't know about the human body and germs and all that genetic stuff they're now learning, genetically diseased. Well, they were so ignorant. I mean, they knew a lot, because there's a lot of stuff in medical books, but a lot they didn't know. I think we need to put ourselves in that situation. We know a lot, but we don't know what we don't know. So don't think that we've got all the vision in the world. We see everything there's to be seen. We know exactly what will happen in the future. We don't. When we get closer, maybe certain things will click, because we've been studying Revelation. But I don't know. I mean, I've been surprised by a few things. I would even surprise you by something. Now, on this, I could be 100% wrong on this. This is pure speculation. Everyone says Donald Trump's naming Jerusalem as the capital of Israel will guarantee they will never have any more Middle East peace agreements, like the Oslo Peace Accord. By the way, the PLO cheated on all those peace accords, and they never lasted anyway. But I disagree. Sometimes with people who don't want to cooperate, tough negotiations actually may work better. I know that sounds contradictory. You say, well, that's never going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised by next year the PLO is frustrated, especially if they cut off American money. They may come to the, they haven't been at the peace talks with Israel face to face for many, many years. They may change that. Now, maybe they won't. What I'm saying is, what we think is common wisdom often is wrong. I've seen that happen on many occasions. Everybody thought they knew this or that would happen. It didn't happen. Maybe the classic example, when they appeased Adolf Hitler and when they appeased North Korea. They gave money to North Korea, appeased them, been nice to them. All they did was use our money and built the atomic bomb anyway. Or when they appeased Hitler, we got World War II. And we know the generals were going to get rid of him if the British and French had stood up to him. All that we now know that we didn't know. The point is, things that people think are true often aren't true. So all I'm saying, when it comes to spiritual knowledge, we need to be humble and say, well, we see some things, but to say we got great spiritual eyesight, I'm not so sure about that. The point I'm making is, the Laodicean said, we're rich spiritually. God says, you're poor. We got great spiritual righteous clothes on. God said, you're naked. You're in rags. They said, we have need of nothing. And God said they were lukewarm and he was going to spit them out of his mouth. So a weak Christian and a weak church is one that is proud, like the people that we just talked about, who believe they're earning their own salvation through their own activities. The truth is, if we make it, it's because we get in tune with God's Spirit, and God's Spirit, in spite of our human nature, develops in us sufficiently that God puts us in his family through grace. I'm not saying disobey God. You know, I know better than say anything that stupid. But I'm saying kind of let God do it. Don't get proud and try to impress God with your goodness. Because we're not good, even if we think we're good. I mean, there's a good side of human nature, but there's a bad side that's always lurking in the past, in the background. And I think we have to remain spiritually on guard. So like a big game hunter. If you're a big game hunter, one of the things that you learn is you have to be cautious. A lot of things can go wrong. Even if you stay on the jungle trail, you know, there are all kinds of things. Wild animals are unpredictable. Now, somebody who's a novice or sophomoric, that's a term that means you heard the term a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. You know enough. Well, I know how to work this big gun. I know a little bit about animals. And you go out there in the jungle thinking, you know, and you're not cautious enough, you get yourself eaten and killed. Or when they say a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, like in a pilot, you get the first time you fly solo, I did it, you know, once, and you really don't know that much about flying. You can fly if everything goes well. Something goes wrong. You know, there are a lot of bad things going on with the weather. With all that stuff, you could be dead. In other words, realize that human nature is dangerous. Stay alert. Stay humble. Be cautious. Let's go to Romans 6. Since we're mostly in the book of Romans, Romans 6, we're going to look at verse 12 and 13. Romans 6. Remember, he's writing this to probably fairly new Christians in Rome who haven't had a teacher yet because Paul hasn't gotten there. At the very end of the book of Acts, he gets there, but it's in the future. Romans 6:12, he says, let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that you should obey it in the lust thereof. Neither yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness and sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead. And I'm emphasizing the word yield yourself to God. We have to figure out what that means, but try to, in prayer and what we do, yield ourselves to God. Let God lead us as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. He says that if you give in to sin too much, you become a slave of sin. You get addicted to it. So yielding to God is a tricky thing, but I believe that's what a stronger, mature Christian does. Publicly displaying your piousness is anathema. Now think about the Jews who are arguing with each other over which days to fast. That means they were publicly telling everybody, I fast twice a week, or whatever they did, every Tuesday, Thursday, I fast. You know, Christ said that when you fast, do it secretly. Don't let other people, now maybe your wife has to know, but you know what I mean. Don't let everybody know. Christ said, the moment you start displaying or bragging about your fasting, you're undermining the benefit of it. I would argue that if the Pharisaical Jewish Christians, I'll qualify it, who are going around arguing with each other about how often they fasted, the very fact that they were boasting about it, talking about it publicly, made them weak Christians, but also their fasting did them more harm than good. You're going to say, how is that possible? Well, if I run around and I tell people, you know, I fasted Tuesday, Thursday, look at me. Did you fast? You only fasted Wednesday, right? So you're not as, you know, fasting should make us more humble, and in being more humble, God's Spirit can work in us better. But if fasting, like with the Pharisees in Luke 18, make you prouder, in other words, it was like showmanship. If you have to talk about your fasting publicly, you are a weak Christian in God's perspective. Do it privately, it's between you and God. You don't have to boast about how much you pray, how much you fast, how generous you are. I mean, occasionally it may be appropriate to tell somebody something positive to encourage them, but you know what I mean by going around boasting about it all the time. You might say to someone, I'm going to fast and pray for you so that God will help you. You know, that would be appropriate, but I think you know what I mean about publicly arguing with people about you fast more than they do. Or I have a purer diet than you have. Nothing impure has ever crossed my lips. In our world and our food supply, that's probably impossible. But what goes in our mind is what really we have to worry about the most. So don't let other people know about your fasting. That's what a strong Christian would do. Don't go around talking about it. I think you do yourself more spiritual damage than good. And then you get more pride and less humility. And that's God's definition of a weak Christian. A recipe for spiritual weakness is to do that kind of thing. I'm going to summarize what I think we can get out of Romans 14, 5 through 7. This is what Paul was telling them in the letter. So long before he got there, hopefully that epistle of his helped them out. If you are obsessed with meat purity, you are a weak Christian, but don't argue with other people about it. Just, you know, and don't argue either way. Someone says, well, you know, I never eat out on the Sabbath, though the church has decided, especially when you're traveling, it's appropriate. If you feel that makes you more pure than others, don't argue over it. Keep it to yourself. If you start boasting about it, then you become a weak Christian. I hope you see that pattern. Number two, if you are obsessed with fasting during the week to showcase yourself, you know, when you're fasting, you are weak. If you're obsessed over which days and methods are best to fast, you are weak and unbalanced. I believe that's what Paul is really saying. So, in conclusion, I would say, Paul is telling us, stay humble, stay cautious of your human nature, stay wise, and stay strong Christians.